So, welcome to Anime Talk. I am Joe. I am your host. Thank you for joining us once again this evening. Today's opening song was recommended by Flomu. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. That was the Nichijou opening. But let's get started. As always, I am your host. I am a guest writer or a staff writer at We Remember Love. You can find me on Twitter at Joe Animated. And if you like, you can either send me a tweet or tag it to Joe's Anime Talk, and we'll get your questions at the end of the show thrown into our guests. And as for our guests, I have two brand new ones tonight and a long time ago returnee. So let's get those guys going. First up is Dragonite. Go ahead.
Hello, I'm Dragonite. I do writing every once in a while at North of Hell, South of the Spider, which you can find at dragonite.wordpress.com. I also do a lot of voice acting stuff, so you can keep track of that on Twitter if you want.
All right, thank you very much. And our next new guest is Sushi. Go ahead.
Hey guys, my name is Sushi. Currently, I'm the founder and only writer for SushiGoKart.net, and I just recently became a team writer for Metanorn.net, so definitely check those two sites out. And, of course, you can follow me at Twitter at SushiGoKart.
Awesome, yes. And like I said, Sushi's got a new blog. Check it out. It's got some interesting things to say, definitely. And our last but not least guest, our returner this week, is Lurst. Go ahead.
What's going on, guys? I'm Lurst. I write for Anime Athlete Podcast. You can check us out at animeathletepodcast.wordpress.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Lurst21121. And, yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Well, those are our guests for tonight. And let's get started with our first topic, our first point of discussion. So, anime is full of cliches, you know. Harems have their share of them. Shonen shows have. If you are going to change something about these cliches, or if there's a cliche that just really irks you, a pet peeve almost, what cliche would you like to see go away? Lurks, why don't you start?
Well, I wouldn't say, like, go away with it, but, like, kind of tone it down some, but, like, why is it that every, like, main character is in the classroom? Like, it seems that every main character has to sit in, like, the far back corner, like, the second row from the back, right next to the back. That's, it's not something that should probably go away. It's probably something that should change.
So. But that's what they get their protagonist powers from, you know? Spider-Man characters by the Spider, and anime characters get their powers from the window seat.
True.
It's true. But every time, like a main character has a problem, he just looks out the window and it's everything's solved. That's how it is.
I mean, that's where the, like, inspiration from God comes to the main character, I guess. I mean, also, it creates for a nice window shot every time, you know, the camera pans along it. They're looking out into the settings that all the creators worked hard on.
Yeah.
I noticed, too, that in that particular instance, it's always kitty corner to the door. It's the seat farthest from the exit. Now, sometimes there's a second door farther back along that same row. But it seems like it's always they have to walk through the door, they check in, and they go back to the complete farthest away from that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just seems like, yeah, it's definitely one of those things where you think the newest kid would be stuck in the front seat.
Yeah, I mean, and also, you'd also think that since most main characters also, like, have this, like, aura of, like, laziness about them, they're always complaining how everything's a hassle, that they would just take the seat in the front because it's the closest to where they enter the classroom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Dragonite, what do you think? What's a cliche you'd like to see go away?
Well, I guess a big one for me is probably the way Americans are portrayed in anime a lot. Just because it didn't bother me a lot at first, but recently, like, I feel like it's been proven that they can get people who speak fluent English to, you know, voice act for their anime. So it just seems odd that they have all these, you know, stereotypical "I don't speak very well" voices on their anime. Like, though, like I love the Steins Gate OVA that came up recently, but that entire scene at the airport with the people working there just.
That's funny. Yeah, because pretty. I mean, you can get, like, for example, there's been a few openings and endings recently where there's been some English, which hasn't been terrible. It's actually been pretty legible. So you think, yeah, they could improve a little bit on that, or even just portrayal of Americans in general. But there's always, you know, our perception of ourselves and other people's perceptions that always kind of make things interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they definitely can get people to speak in English, even for the music. Like, I was blown away by that song in Jormungand, the rap song that used in... I listened to the full version, and it's just... I feel like maybe they got someone, an American artist, to do that, because it was just perfect English. So I don't know why they keep up with the horrible, horrible English.
I mean, to, like, the credit of, like, Anime Now, I mean, especially with this season, they've been pretty good at, like, portraying other languages. I mean, there's, like, 4 series right now have, like, Italian in it, and it's, like, sure, I'm not, like, an expert on Italian, but it sure as hell sounds like Italian, not, like, you know, some butchered Japanese Italian version of it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There was something like Tari Tari in the, yeah, last episode, yeah. Campione.
But Tari 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 had, like, Tari Tari had the Italian guy, but then it also had the main character girl talking in that scene, saying, "I don't money."
So, I thought it was
everything.
He
said
it.
I feel like he was speaking Spanish.
Yeah.
I should know, I guess.
So, Sushi,
but I guess it's definitely moving.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah. I feel like it's definitely moving in, like, the right direction. I mean, you know, I mean, these anime do have, like, bigger budgets now, and they are trying to go for, like, you know, the native speakers sort of voice actors now, instead of just getting all these Japanese seiyuu to try and speak languages they're not familiar with.
Yeah. So, Sushi, what about you? What cliche would you like to see go away?
Well, I'd like to see them all go away, but my one, like, sort of pet peeve is, like, tsundere's. Like,
oh, come on,
honestly,
now. No.
Yeah.
I cannot accept this.
I have a really big problem with tsundere's.
You are heartless.
Only because it leads to that sort of cliched storyline where, you know, boy meets girl, girl calls boy baka, and, like, then it's like, what have you. You know they're meant to be. You know? And, like, I appreciate when, like, this, when the chemistry between, like, a female lead and a male lead is not all based on just that trope. I like it, like, you know, Natsuyuki Rendezvous. There's great chemistry between them, and it doesn't, like, pigeonhole itself into any of those cliches. You know, it builds, like, a natural relationship between the male and female lead.
I'm trying to think, would you consider the relationship, we talked about Steins Gate a second ago, would you consider the relationship there more cliche or not?
You know, for me, at least, Steins Gate, I mean, in touch upon this later on another topic, but I don't really know. I mean, there's a lot going on in the anime, and, like, sure, the romance was a focal point, but my main sort of gripe is when the romance is the main focal point, and that's used to drive it all.
Gotcha.
Like, that's...
Okay, fair enough. I think for me, the one cliche I think I could see going back to the harem-esque thing, the boy, you know, where the male lead trips and falls right into the chest, you know, trips, hits the girl, and falls right into her chest every time. Either his hands are on him, or his face is in between them. You know what I mean?
What, that doesn't happen to you in real life? My God.
If
it happens to me all the time.
Every day.
Like, at least twice a day.
I think if that happened to me in real life, as often as it happens in anime, I would have been fired from my job years ago. For sexual harassment. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's like, yes, you trip and fall. Does it have to be in the biggest-chested, most sundry girl of the entire show? Every time.
Yes. All right. How about if they reverse the trope and the girl falls into the guy's crotch? Would that satisfy you?
I think we got a harem. Not a harem. We have a hentai at that point, right? I think that's the hentai trope, isn't it? It's the reverse. The harem trope is where it's guy falls into girl. The hentai trope is where the girl falls into the guy, right? Okay, too much silence there, guys. You're killing me.
Yeah.
It can't be that bad.
No.
I was going to bring up another hentai trope, but that would have been too much. I don't want to bring it
up. Go ahead, just do it. Just bring up the trope.
Oh, man, I'm going to hate myself for saying this, but what if in hentais, what if the guy's hips started moving on their own? Damn it. I couldn't help myself. I had to bring it up.
And then what if they all cluck like a chicken? I want that, you know? There's not enough of that in hentai. Just saying. Or anime, you know? Not just hentai.
Like, chicken bucking?
You know, clocking, clucking, a doodle doing, you know?
Oh, jeez.
Various chicken sound effects. Maybe roosters, too, if they can afford it. Kyoani could probably do that.
I can imagine that happening if they made, like, a hentai version of, like, Jinrui. Like, it's a whole chicken clucking thing.
Nice.
Okay, that just scarred me right there. Thinking of a hentai, a hentai version of Jinrui. That's gonna scar me.
Hey, so with the way that that series is going, like I don't like seeing something hentai, albeit censored, like I would not be surprised because that series just goes out of like left field. So.
Oh, jeez.
And it completely destroys every cliche there is. Or attempts to.
That's true. We'll diverge from the topic just a sec, but this last week's show was, for me, I was on the fence of watching it. This last week's show kind of tipped me over to say, yeah, I'll finish the season out for it. It's interesting enough. But anyways. Yeah, so definitely cliches and tropes, there's definitely a lot of them. Many of them are probably to the point of being almost a pet peeve for people. But moving on. So, in combination of your typical tropes, where you know what to expect from either a harem show or the shonen show, you get those occasional shows that delve into the philosophy of life or that really try to use more symbolism and philosophy than just beating you over the head with what's going on. So, how does philosophy elevate an anime, and when does it belong or not belong? Sushi, why don't you start us off?
Alright, so, I mean, for me, I feel, especially considering the type of writer that I am, philosophy is really important when it comes to exploring anime. I mean, it's easy to get, you know, hung up on, like, the art or just the story, but I think that philosophy plays a really important role, and not just in those anime that have sort of a philosophy bent to them, like, say, Serial Experiments Lane, or, like, Bakemonogatari, like, those just scream out, like, hey, listen, I have this philosophical agenda, and I'm trying to impart my ideals onto my viewership. I think it's really important to acknowledge the philosophy of the series in order to understand the plot better, the motivations of the characters better, and, you know, to get all-around greater appreciation for whatever the series is. And for when it doesn't belong and or belong, I'm definitely going to say that, sure, in, like, ecchi anime, like, you know, things that are just, like, you know, have a comedy bent to them or, you know, like an arrow bent to them, the philosophy really doesn't belong because, like, you know, everything that's happening on screen, it kind of defers the attention away for deeper thinking, whatnot. But I think that, you know, a lot of anime people will be surprised do have some sort of philosophy they're trying to impart on their viewers.
Okay. Dragonite, what do you think?
Well, for me, I definitely think that, you know, philosophy can elevate anime a lot. I'm not as well versed with a lot of philosophical or, like, religious kind of texts, I guess. I mean, like, when I watch a show, I guess Penguin Drum's a good example. When I saw Penguin Drum, I didn't really pick up on a lot of the philosophy that was in the show until I kind of started looking into it after watching the episodes. So I guess for me, philosophy and those kinds of undertones tend to add, like, a sort of second layer of enjoyment to the show. Like, I can watch a show and enjoy it, and then afterwards, maybe I'll read someone's blog post or, you know, watch again and look for details that kind of point out the philosophical points of the show, like where they're trying to reference certain things. And I think that's, you know, really fun, and it kind of elevates what anime in general can really do as a media. That being said, though, I think it's, like, there are definitely places where that kind of philosophical stuff doesn't belong, and you can primarily tell where, like, if it's not primary focus of the show, it's better just to leave that kind of deeper stuff out of it. Like, it's very obvious going to certain shows if it's going to be a primary focus, things like philosophical messages like Bakemono. But if it's just some sort of, like, secondary story arc in an ecchi anime or slice of life or whatever, it's better not to try and divulge into that kind of stuff and just, you know, stick with where the anime was originally trying to go.
So, Lurks, what about you? This is kind of a heavy topic, so I know there's probably, you know, a lot of different...
Yeah, that's heavy, dog.
Heavy topic.
I don't think I've ever put, like, philosophy and anime in the same context before, because this is, like, all going way over my head. I don't think I've ever, like, watched an anime and thought of, like, there being philosophy to it, or maybe it's just that there was, and it just went in one ear and out the other for me.
I think, like, for a lot of viewers, it's like that. I mean, I was talking to a blogger one day, and, you know, they were sort of writing, like, editorials on Fate Zero, and then he was getting comments like, oh, can you, like, go back to the episode summary? I don't really care about all this philosophical nonsense. And I just think that for a lot of people, it's like, unless you're from a philosophical background, it's hard to see other philosophical questions that anime might bring up that you might normally not see. Most people just think that philosophy means, like, what is the meaning of life when it doesn't have to be. Like, I think a good example is, like, Sword Art Online. You know, it does ask a very important philosophical question in the second episode. Like, are we our brother's keeper? When there's that whole conflict between those that were in the beta test and those that are beginners, newbies. And they were saying, oh, you know, all the beta testers need to help and need to come and protect and help all the beginners because they were around before, they have more experience. So it's like those type of philosophical questions that people will sort of ignore unless they're from, like, say, a philosophical background. And they have a very narrow view of what philosophy actually is.
See, unfortunately for me, I come from a very, I guess my education was focused on the technical side of things. I brushed through my philosophies and my classical English classes to focus on physics and engineering. So philosophy for me, watching a show like Penguin Drum, after a while it seemed very heavy-handed. Like I was being beat almost over the head with it at times. Does that make sense? So, I guess it all comes down to the viewer. If somebody understands what's being portrayed or what's being thrown out there, it's probably much easier to digest than someone who is not from that background.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. Like, sometimes it's like, it's annoying when an anime tries too hard, per se. Like, yeah, like, you bring up Penguin Drum, like, at times it felt like, you know, alright, you know, there's something to be said for subtlety, and you're obviously not being subtle. But you know, sometimes, you know, you'll see creators sometimes go out of their way to point out there is philosophy. Like, I know I'm using recent examples, but it's just fresh in my mind right now. In Kokoro Connect, when Iori just goes out and blatantly says, like, if we don't have our bodies, and, you know, it's just our souls and personalities that are switching, do we lose our identity? And it's like, whoa, where did that come from?
Ooh.
I mean, I thought this would be like a... Like, yeah, the creator took his time to, like, point it out for you. He was like, hey, I know you're having a great time, but this is one of the issues that our characters are facing.
And see, that's kind of... I don't know, I enjoyed that a little more than just throwing in a red apple and expecting me to understand that it has some sort of significance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or expecting me to understand that this certain plot segment relates to a book that was only written in Japanese and never translated. But if I don't understand what happened in that book, like, what I'm watching won't make as much sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely agree that subtlety is a big part of it. Like, there definitely were a lot of moments in Penguin Drum, especially in later episodes, where they really weren't even trying to subtle the philosophy. It was basically like, okay, if you're not following, then watch something else, because this is getting super heavy. Like, that episode where the red-haired character is walking through the stairs, and that red string is slowly, like, getting longer on his sweater. Just like, it was very obvious at that point that they were throwing it subtly out of the window.
Yeah.
That show seemed like one giant metaphor after another.
Yeah.
That's essentially what I got out of that show.
Someone told me it was about the sarin gas attacks, and I was like, that kind of completely went over my head.
Oh, yeah, that blew my mind. Like, I started reading, like, blog posts after watching episodes of Penguin Drum around the first episode that the sarin gas was introduced. And I had no idea that was in the show, you know? Like, my mind was freaking blown.
Yeah, and I was like, where the fuck did that come from? Like,
yeah.
But, like, yeah, you know, I think, like, not... Go on, sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, like, the giant 85s inside of the train or whatever. Like, oh, that's the year the gas attacks happened. Like, what?
And... I feel like, you know, I don't think subtlety is, like, a hard and fast rule, because, like, look at a show like, you know, like, Jintai, I mean, you know, Jinri. It's, like, it clearly states out, like, whatever, like, social commentary it's making, but then it throws in, like, a chicken running to Ave Maria. So, like, you're like, it's like, oh, yeah, I thought about it for a second, but then you throw in some really funny shit, so I'm good. You know, it has something for both sides.
Oh, yeah.
Point, I guess.
Well, just the entire last episode was a bash against the copyright conglomerate. I mean, they basically just told them, what you guys are doing is stupid, screw off. You know what I mean? Like, the whole point of, you know, the freedom to express is what generates culture, and you can't control ideas. You know, that whole... It was just a big wooden bat they were beating over people to think that because copyright is the end-all to producing great works. You know what I mean?
I thought it was just trying to say that in a post-apocalypse, we will never lose yaoi manga.
Oh. Well, that's
something. Some things never die.
Well, if you guys ever want to get onto a long discussion about why I think the copyright system is broken and destroyed, and why I think copyright, patent, and trademark should be abolished, we can do that. But tonight is definitely not that night.
No, let's turn it into Copyright Cast.
Copyright Cast, oh my gosh. If you want to see me rant about something, it's copyright and patent law. It's the most terrible thing ever created. But anyways, we're not going to go there because it's going to become from Anime Talk to Joe's angry rant. But anyways, guys, let's move on. So for me, over the last two seasons, I've noticed a lot of adaptation surges from light novels, visual novels, eroges, things like that. What are your guys' thoughts on this recent surge? Has it been good? Has it been a flop? Is it producing something that's worth watching? I mean, you've got stuff like Persona 4, you had Yosuga no Sora, this season you've got Sword Art Online. Now, Dragonite, what's your thoughts?
Well, all these light novel and visual novel adaptations, especially recently, don't really bother me, because, well, with the things they're adapting in particular, I don't really read a lot of light novels or visual novels. Like, if anything, I'll try to, you know, read those after I've, like, heard of the anime that they're adapting. But, I mean, then, you know, Persona 4 got adapted as an anime, and I had played that game and loved it. And with Persona 4, I definitely felt like an anime fit the kind of story they were telling. Like, when I first played the game, before the anime was announced and all, I really figured, like, this would make a great anime. Just, like, it's got a lot of kind of, like, story beats that a proper anime would have. And I finished watching Persona 4 anime really recently, and I loved it. Like, I thought it told the story really well. So, I mean, like, I don't have a problem with adaptations in terms of quality, really, because a lot of adaptations of the adaptations we've seen you know, they prove that they can properly adapt the story and tell it in a really interesting way. But, like, adaptations I do have a problem with are all of the eroge adaptations, all the hentai adaptations. Like, there aren't as many, but they do happen. And it's just weird because it's a hentai, but you're doing an anime adaptation that airs on TV, so you can't really do the scenes that are shown in the visual novel, and it's just like, just don't do it. Just don't bother. Like, something like that with the hentai adaptations, I'm kind of weirded out by. But, I mean, as long as they keep up the high-quality productions of the light novel adaptations and, you know, maybe do more video game adaptations in the future, because Persona 4 was pretty entertaining, I have no problem with it. Like, it's a lot like, you know, the movie industry in America. Like, you don't see many original movies in, you know, theaters very often. It's usually stuff based on comic books and stuff like that. And even when there is an original movie, it ends up getting a video game adaptation, you know, to spark sales and stuff. Like, it's not like Japan only does it, so it's really nothing new.
I mean, you know, I agree with you, but, like, that's, you know, the light novel adaptations work, and as long as, like, you know, sort of anime creators are smart about what they're adapting. You know, some series just don't work as an anime. And,
yeah.
Like, one of my favorite anime of all time is a light novel adaptation, and that's Bison Wolf. I love that anime to death. And, you know, it had the proper pacing of, you know, it didn't fall into that whole sort of, I feel like there's a light novel trap of becoming too wordy. I mean, we definitely saw that with Bakemonogatari. Like, basically, that was just 300 minutes of straight dialogue. And,
yeah.
I mean, if it were any other show, I feel like that would have failed horribly, and everyone would be bored out of their minds watching it and would have ended up dropping it. But, you know, if there's a way, proper way to adopt novels, and I think that, you know, it's getting a lot better, which light novels are adapted, and how they're adapted, and which scenes are taken. But there are certain light novels I feel that should have not been adapted. They were adapted, like, anime was not the medium for them. And that's, like, Axel World. I mean, I've bashed it, like, like, every single episode on my blog. I've completely hated it. And, you know, I would say, like, that sort of light novel would have been great as a video game. That would have been a great video game. But as an anime, it's like, I don't even know. I guess it's something about the inherent story itself or whatnot, but I don't think it was. I don't think it's good.
Yeah.
So I got in this discussion again yesterday with some people on Twitter, and then with Kevo and Adrian over at the Friday Anime Podcast. But Sword Art Online is taking a lot of flack recently. I have not read the light novel. I've noticed it's translated, and if I want to go read it, I can do that. But I think that each medium should stand on its own as almost as if they're two different stories. Does that make sense? Because with the light novel, you have the opportunity to expand and provide a story that may not adapt well live or animated. So, I mean, for me, I'm enjoying Sword Art Online without understanding any of the backstory, without reading any of the novel. I think it's decent to watch. It's typical shonen fighting competition type stuff. Nothing spectacular, but it's a good watch. But you go and read some comments on some of these posts, and there's some serious light novel haters out there. It's people that seriously need a Valium. You know?
I mean, I think it's like, I mean, at least on the online community, we see, like, sort of, you'll make comments about light novel adaptations, and, you know, there are people that read light novels and love light novel adaptations, and there are people that read light novels and hate light novel adaptations. And me, I'm a viewer that doesn't read light novels. I just don't. I don't find any appeal in reading them. Even though I love Spice and Wolf so much, I didn't go out and read any of the translations. And, you know, you'll make a comment, like, you know, oh, Axel World sucks, A, B, C, and D, this is why it sucks. And then someone that does love light novels will go, oh, well, you don't understand what's going on because you didn't read the light novel. And I mean, it's hard to say that someone's opinion is wrong, but I feel that's wrong, because if you're going to make it an anime, I shouldn't have to go and read the light novel to appreciate the anime.
Yeah, like, I'm sort of in the same boat where I don't really read light novels. Like, they're not really even kind of a part of the sort of entertainment that I indulge in. So, if anything, all the light novel adaptations, they tend to be, you know, original works in my eyes until it's pointed out that they're actually adaptations. Like, I love Bakugo, you know, and it's one of my favorite anime, and it was only recently that I discovered that it was based on, like, a super long series of light novels. But even then, like, it's just not a medium that I really want to spend a lot of my time, like, going into. Like, I don't want to read light novels a lot. So when people complain about an anime and cite the fact that people haven't read the light novel as a problem, like, that's not how you criticize an anime. Like, the anime has to tell its story, and that's it. Like, it shouldn't have the light novel as a required backup for the story, you know? Like, I definitely agree with you on that.
So one of my favorite manga, which was Mysterious Girlfriend X, was adapted as an anime last season. So going in, I had my concerns and doubts. You know, being a fan of the written form, you know, you always want to make sure that things are, I don't know how you want to put it, you want to make sure that it's true to your feelings, if that makes sense. And I was impressed by the way they were able to pick and choose, out of order, mind you, you know, bits and pieces of the story and weave it into a coherent 13 episodes, and it was great. I think the anime, even though it's completely different, not completely different, it's ordered different than the manga, was great. And I appreciated that they took what was unique and special and kept that going, regardless of whether it was true to the actual story itself or the flow of the actual story. Not everybody agrees with that, but, you know, it is what it is. I just feel bad that there are SAOs getting a bad rap because there's so many of these light novel, and SAOs, it's a recent example, there are plenty of others, that it's getting a bad rap for almost no reason, you know?
Yeah, like, I agree that sort of, like, when you do an adaptation, like, The Girlfriend X is a good example, like, you're usually adapting a very long work, and you can't fit all that into a 13 or even 24 episode time. Like, Persona 4, that anime was maybe 10 hours, but it was adapting an 80-hour game, and so they had to cut out a lot of stuff and kind of move around a lot of things, and even though they weren't able to get into kind of, like, the deep backstory of a lot of the personas and their designs, it still told the story of the game in a really well thought out way by sort of, like, combining a lot of the less necessary story arcs from the game where you're leveling up your relations with the side characters. They kind of combined a lot of the side character arcs into one episode, and that told all the stories really well. So, I mean, I think that, you know, an anime adaptation of that kind of stuff isn't always going to tell the story of the light novel page by page, but as long as they still manage to weave a really good story, it doesn't really matter if they're not page by page exact with their adaptation.
Exactly. Any other thoughts on that, guys? Go ahead.
I was just about to comment on that. Even if the right cuts have to be made. I mean, when you look at, like, Sakamichi no Apple, like, you know, I feel like for that anime, obviously it was a manga adaptation, but it made the right cuts, you know, to tell its story within, what, 13 or 14 episodes. I think the problem comes, like, with what material to cut and generating hate is, like, with, you know, visual novels, because, you know, visual novels are mostly these multi-branching path games where, like, you know, you pick a girl and you kind of run with it, and you know, you'll always have those people that's like, oh, no, so why didn't you pick girl B over girl A? And, you know, it'll divide the fan base. But I think it's very important to pick, like, the right parts of that visual novel to create, you know, that cohesive story. Like, I think a great example is, like, Tsukihime. I love that anime. And, you know, it just picked one of the storylines, the direct storyline, and went with it. But it also included scenes from the other storylines as well, that added to the whole experience of watching it. But then you'll have, like, their anime go down this omnibus route, which I just think is very lazy storytelling. Well, they'll just go through each of the arcs so they can please everybody that's a fan of the original property.
Hmm. So good points, guys. So let's go into some of our viewer questions tonight. So first one up. What are your thoughts on the rise of 3D animation? And has the industry, I'm guessing he's referring to the anime industry, learned to effectively use it?
Are we talking CG here?
I would include CG in that as well, probably.
I despise CG. I really hate that. I hate it. It just looks so
bad.
I'm
a firm hater of CG, too.
I don't think I've seen an anime that has properly executed upon using CG at all.
I'm trying to think what's using it right now. What about AKB? When they go into the dance scenes, it switches over to being a CG girls.
I'm not watching that show, so I have no opinion on it.
Well, I'm not really offended by 3D CG, I guess. I've definitely seen examples where it can be used properly. Like, I actually thought that the sort of the CG scenes in that that King of Thorn OVA, I thought it was really done interestingly. Like, it probably wasn't the prettiest 3D CG, but the way that it was switching between the 2D animation and the CG kind of worked in the favor of the CG, because with something like that New Kingdom anime, it's just starting off right away in CG, and the character designs kind of lose, ironically enough, they lose a lot of their volume in the CG, just because the harsh lines with the way it's rendered kind of makes it a little bland. But with King of Thorn, you're introduced to the characters and everything in this 2D animation style, and then they get to sort of the main event where they're trapped inside of that laboratory, and it's switching between the 2D animation and the 3D every once in a while, and it lets the, you know, the CG animation kind of rely on the 2D characters to sort of, it's kind of hard to explain, but just the way that it was switching between the CG and the animation at the proper times really helped the CG not be so ugly.
For me, like, whenever I see CG, it, like, I'm, like, completely disheartened. Like, I look so ugly and, like, out of place. I remember, like, alright, one of the only scenes I remember from Sankaria is when he's, like, getting ice for Sankaria, like, the main character. And they used CG ice, and I'm, like, thinking in my head for the rest of the episode, like, that ice looked really, really bad. Like, how hard would it be to make, just draw some ice? But I feel like it can be used effectively. Like, I don't have, like, an example off the top of my head. When you're using it to, like, sort of, you're sort of using it as, like, a visual metaphor to, like, separate certain things, right? Like, say, like, one dimension for another, or, like, using it to represent a certain thing. I think one of the commenters talked about the mechs in, like, Muv Luv. Like, you know, those, they're sort of different. They're separate from, like, the characters and whatnot, and they sort of represent a different thing. And, like, you know, the mechs are represented in that CG, so it flows better with all the artwork.
So Posh just brought up a point that I completely forgot about, and I feel terrible for thinking about it, because it's, like, my number three favorite anime of all time, but it's Ghost in the Shell has actually some pretty decent CG in it for a standalone complex with the Tachikomas. But also in Ghost in the Shell 2.0, which is the version of the original Ghost in the Shell movie with CGI in it. The opening scene has this one moment of CGI where Motoko actually goes full camo, and it's actually really cool to see that in CG. So Ghost in the Shell is probably, like, the only example I can think of that actually executes upon using CG well. Everything else I've seen just doesn't look good. Especially, like, Fate State. Fate State Night has a terrible, terrible example of CGI.
Yeah.
Well, what did you think about the CG in Fate Zero with Berserker?
With Berserker? It was okay.
You gotta think Ghost in the Shell 2 is a...
I'll say this, though. Like, when he jumps on the jet and, like, starts zooming around and shit, I was like, I'm okay with this.
I think Ghost in the Shell... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go on.
I was going to say, speaking of Ghost in the Shell, I think for as old as it was, I mean, they've done a pretty good job of refreshing and adding in some CGI without butchering that show at all.
Right.
But go ahead.
Now that you bring up Ghost in the Shell, it sprung my memory. Summer Wars had really good CG in it, mainly because they went for, like, that whole cel-shaded look. I don't know, like, at that time, like, you know, a lot of these Japanese games were getting really popular for using that cel-shaded look, like the Cloud 2 more specifically, and the new Wild Arms game, and Dragon Quest. They were using this cel-shaded look, and sort of, yeah, when they did it for Summer Wars, it was like, they followed up, like, that whole, like, sort of internet world was in cel-shaded CG, and it looked fantastic. It looked great, and, you know, it created a... Visually, you can easily tell between what's happening in the real world and what's happening in the digital world.
Yeah, you're right. Summer Wars does have good CG, especially when you're in Oz, and you're watching all these avatars float around. It's really cool watching that. I think it's just the fact that, you know, there's a lot of bad CG, so it kind of overtakes the good CG. Like, oh, another example of bad CG is in Tokyo Magnitude 8.0. When you're watching the people walk around in the background, every person walking around in the background is made completely out of CG, not hand-drawn. And it looked terrible. It's distracting.
So let's look through some of our other questions, guys. I think we have one that's specifically directed towards our guest, Dragonite.
Oh, no.
It says, how do you combat going into series which original sources you never ventured? Later. I don't know what they're hinting at there, but maybe something you know, something you've written on your blog about.
What was it? How do I watch a series where I'm not familiar with the original source?
I believe so, yes.
I guess it depends on how good the adaptation is, you know? Like, Bakano, the story... I'll admit, Bakano's story was... the way they handled the pacing was weird, but I like that kind of thing. Like, movies like, you know, Pulp Fiction and Snatch, where it's a lot of these separate, small storylines that end up getting, you know, attached at the end in this really big, explosive finale. Like, stuff like Bakano and Durarara, I thought it was handled pretty well, and I didn't really feel like I was missing out on anything. If anything, I would, you know, later find out that those shows were based on light novels, and I'd feel like I was missing out on something then. Like, I'd see that Durarara and Bakano have all of these light novel volumes that weren't adapted in the anime, and it's not like, oh, why didn't the anime cover this? It's more like, well, I understand that they had a limited amount of time, now... I want adaptations of all this stuff. Like, I can't wait for the next season, and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, I think it speaks to the sort of the adaptation surge lately that I can watch all these shows without being familiar with the original source, whether it's a light novel or a visual novel or a video game or whatever, and still understand and enjoy what's going on, I guess.
So, one more question here before we finish up. We talked about this last week, but I'll present it to you guys as too. You guys as well. Do you think there's a place for more Western adaptations? Western-based adaptations? Like, they've done some Marvel to anime adaptations. Supernatural was adapted. Do you guys think there's still or you guys think that there'll be more places for Western comics or Western story plots in anime?
I mean, for me at least, right as of right now, I've hated mostly what I've watched that has been adapted from, like, you know, Western, you know, comic books and whatnot. I mean, that all those animes that were released by Madhouse, I think, you know, Wolverine, Iron Man, and X-Men, and Blade, I hated all of them. Mainly because, like, sometimes it would be like, all right, we're going to just take sort of this Western story and try and, like, animeize it. Like, in Wolverine, like, he gets with this random Japanese character she is in the Marvel Universe, but that story is, like,
It's like one of those small stories that was relegated to like two or three comics, and it seems completely out of place. And sometimes it does work, though. Like, you saw some of that Matrix stuff, like the Animatrix stuff, but that was made mostly for a Western audience. It wasn't made for an Eastern audience, per se.
Makes sense. Anybody else?
I mean, I think that there's definitely more room for them, you know? Like, I saw all the, you know, the Marvel Madhouse anime that went out recently, and I didn't really enjoy them as much as I was hoping to, mainly because I feel like they kind of stood halfway on where they were trying to go, you know? Like, part of it was like, yeah, you know, there's Wolverine, and he's, you know, in the city doing all this Wolverine stuff, but then the other half is just like, they're unnecessarily throwing in all this Japanese culture, most likely just because, you know, oh, it's an anime, it's gotta be Japanese. Like, X-Men had, them traveling to Japan to rescue that Japanese girl with powers, and just like in Wolverine, she is from the comics, and she plays an important part in a lot of the storylines, but, like, not in a lot of the X-Men storylines, and especially not the more iconic X-Men storylines. Like, my problem with the Madhouse Marvel shows is that they didn't really adapt any of the popular stories from the comics. They sort of did their own original things, and I think it would be a lot better if they just did a more faithful adaptation of the other stories instead of unnecessarily weaving together these stories of Japanese culture just for the sake of it being anime, you know? I thought the Supernatural anime was cool. I enjoyed that. But what I really enjoy a lot more are anime that have Western themes, you know? Like, Tiger and Bunny is probably one of, if not my favorite anime in a while. Just because, like, it's so interesting how they handled sort of, you know, the Western idea of superheroes and, like, live-action TV and stuff. And the way they made it so, like, oh, you know, heroism is commercialized now with, like, the hero TV and everything. I thought it was really interesting. And, like, going back to Bakano, that's, like, a 50s kind of mafia thing, and I really loved it. So, I mean, I definitely think that there's more room for Western anime. Like, I'm crossing my fingers for a Spider-Man anime. But I think they, at least Madhouse needs to realize that they don't need to throw in sort of Japanese themes and cultures just for the sake of it.
Spider-Man in Japan.
Yes! Just anything Spider-Man, please. 24 episodes Spider-Man show, so moving.
Sounds good, guys. Well, we are out of time for questions. We'll have to cut it off there, unless you guys have some final thoughts on that last topic.
Spider-Man anime, 2014.
So, yep. Guys,
made by Production IG.
So as we start to close out, do you guys have any final thoughts? Anything you want to rehash from previous questions, or just any anything you want to throw out there today?
So, summer season is a lot better than what I was anticipating it to be.
Same here.
I thought summer season was going to be real shitty, but it turns out there's a lot, like, all the shows I'm watching, I'm actually enjoying a lot. Except for Tari-Tari, though. Tari-Tari has some really, like, really bad directing in it. That I've noticed in the last two episodes.
I said, you know, Tari-Tari could have been a success if it just became, like, an anime version of Bleach. That's all it needed to do. And it would have been the best show ever.
No, that just sounds bad.
Oh, guys.
I don't know.
Hey, that's the next Madhouse anime, Glee anime.
Oh, jeez. Sushi, what about you? Final thoughts.
Final thoughts. Again, I want to agree that, the summer season has been really, really good. I mean, I want to just follow up on that. But I say people have to be on, like, look out for Kokoro Connect. I really think it's going to be the best show of the season. I mean, sure, Jinri has hype. Sword Art Online has hype. But at the end of the day, I think Jinri is going to lose focus, and Sword Art Online is going to be, what I expected it to be, you know, a decent anime with, you know, some romance thrown into it, and at the end, you know, they all conquer and they leave the game all happily ever after. And Kirito finds Asuna, they get married, and they have children, and in the sequel, the child gets stuck in a video game. and I think that's what it's going to be. But yeah, Culture Connect has a ton of layers to it. That second episode was really, really good. It added a villain, added some drama and tension. It was really funny. It just has a lot of elements in it, and it's really enjoyable all around.
And Dragonite, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just to touch on the summer season, I agree that it's definitely a lot better than I was expecting. Like, I'm watching way more shows than I originally thought I would be, and some of them are shows that I originally thought would be terrible, that I'd never watch. But I do agree that Kokoro Connect is definitely something to keep your eye on. Like, it was the only show, originally, that I planned to watch during the summer season. And I am watching it now, and I think it's really interesting. Also, follow me on Twitter!
All right, well, thanks, guys. So, coming up next week, we have a special edition show. It is Manga Night. I am bringing in Yorocho from Shades of Grey, Azuraz, who was just on a couple weeks ago, from Anime Aura, and Crazy Dave, another one of your favorite Pixiv spammers, to talk manga. So we'll have a great time. If you have anything you want to throw in early, go ahead and go to my WordPress blog at joeanimated.wordpress.com. Also, there is a sticky post at the top where you can recommend next week's opening sound clip. This week, like I said, it was from Flomu. Thank you very much. Go ahead in the comments, list what you want. If I get enough comments, we'll put it to a vote and go from there. If you're interested in being on my show, you can email me at gmail.com. And if you are a podcast-type person and you want to listen to this later, or maybe you didn't catch the whole show, you can subscribe to the podcast, or when I post tomorrow, you can actually download the MP3 directly from WordPress. Thanks again, guys, and have a good night, everybody.
Good night. Oh, and shout out to Birdie.
What? I told him I was going to do it. I forgot to do it. Oh, and Ness. Shout out to both of them.
All right, good night, everybody.
I'm having...